Okay. I am recording this meeting. This is the Netherland Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting for March the 3rd, 2021. As I said, this meeting is being recorded. I will just share my screen so you can all see the agenda. Critically, yep. You should be able to see the agenda. Starting with roll call, so Ian Irwin Powell, I am present. Patrick Richardson.
Present.
Todd Weisler.
Present.
Ray Willis.
Present.
As I said, Henry is, absent, excused because he's traveling. And Chief Burr.
Present.
Okay, we have board quorum. I'll call this meeting to order at 19:03. For the board, I sent you out an updated agenda last night. Just check if there was any queries or comments on the agenda. Otherwise, I'd like to make a motion to approve the meeting agenda as it stands. I've made no other changes since then.
So moved.
Todd?
Yes.
And Patrick?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I also sent out the minutes from the February 3rd meeting on Sunday. Any comments for those minutes, or did anybody pick up any errors and omissions in those?
Ian, there was one thing that I thought that was missing that might be worth, it's kind of important, and that was for the wildland fire tracking and billing. I think we made a statement last meeting, and I was wondering if it was official that Rick Henderson would be taking on that responsibility. And and the chief and Kathy and Rick were going to work on the process and try to accelerate the try to make the process efficient. And so since we're in March and we're kind of rolling into the season, that might be an important item to carry forward.
Okay.
I think it was just there's just a general statement about a discussion about wildland deployments, and that's all it was in the minutes.
I'm just looking at them now. Can you remember where that was?
Yeah, right there, that bullet right underneath the 16 initiatives.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you want to see in there?
Just that Rick Henderson was assigned to, if this is true, if the chief is behind that, and Rick Henderson was going to be the responsible party for handling wildfire billing, and then Kathy and Rick, or the chief, would work on the process and the system.
I like that. Oops.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Based on the update, can I make a motion to approve the minutes for the February 3rd meeting?
So moved.
I approve them also, Todd?
Yes.
And Patrick?
Yes.
Okay. I know we do have some public present on the meeting. Does anyone have any public comments they would like to make to the board at this time? Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. Sorry, I was reorganizing my screen as well. On that note then, moving on. Todd, Treasurer's Report. Pull that in for you. Hand it over to you. Oh, you may have muted.
Oh, thank you. I was. All right. I'll be faster on the button next time. So our balance sheet, you know, as far as savings are concerned, we have $276,000 in savings. The checking shows a negative balance, and that's, again, because the payment for the tender is sitting there waiting to go out once we get the high sign that it's okay to give them the final funds. So we really, it's just showing as a negative balance at this point in time. It's truly not negative. And then a capital reserve of $6,000 that is basically outstanding for the payments to the wildland deployments. The grant match reserves is set up at 28.8, and that's to cover the life packs. And then, of course, we have our same payroll and operating reserve, sick and vacation Tabor, and then the wildland fire reimbursements. Total reserve comes at $237,000. We still have accounts receivable outstanding of $32,000 for wildland deployments. And then also we have expenses not paid of $25,000. I think there's something cut off there. I think we have like 50, what was it?
It's like 51,000, I think.
Quick. Yeah, it's about 51,000 that was non-allocated.
Yeah, 51,000.
Real quick. Yeah, $51,900 okay. Of unreserved funds. I must have cut that off when I pasted that in. Yeah. But going back to these follow-up items from our February board meeting, there was a question from Henry about CPS and Lyon Gaddis not showing up in the income and expense statement. And the reason why it wasn't showing up is because since we're on an accrual system, it hadn't quite hit as an expense, although the check had gone out. And that's why it showed up in the check register, but it had not hit our income and expense statement yet. So if you look at this month's reports, you will see it in the January through February income and expense reporting. Okay. So is there any questions there? And again, just I think one of our agenda items is talk about, you know, possibly moving the meeting to later in the month. And I think that there'll be more of these accrual type of delays that will be captured as a result of that. Then there was a question about wildland billing accuracy. Kathy has provided us with some quite detailed accounting of the billing, what has been invoiced, and what we have received and what is still outstanding, and how that the outstanding amounts and the reserves match up. We can send that to everybody if for those who are interested. It'll take a little plowing through, and Kathy, I talked to her today. She's more than willing to answer questions as well as I, and we can go ahead and do that. So, Ian, if you think that's a good idea, maybe what we can do is just say, if a board member wants to see the numbers, then we can go ahead and forward them the detail. That sound good to you?
I would just forward it to the whole board as it is, and then
okay.
Whoever wants to plow through that can. I had a quick look at it. But you're happy that the numbers are correct and they add up and the amounts.
I haven't seen any discrepancies as I was looking through the numbers last month and this month.
Yeah, and I believe that was Henry's question, was he just wanted to make sure that everything added up and we weren't paying out more than we were receiving, which I believe to be true. Good.
And then we talked about setting a reserve to protect against next year, as far as the amount of money we're floating. And I think that is something we can talk about in future board meetings, but there's no urgency to do that now. But I think what that reserve protects us against is as we cross over from this year into the next year and waiting for the next tax payments to come in from our district, that's where we have to protect ourselves and make sure that we're covered. So we can talk about that in future board meetings. And then we talked about setting a grant match reserve of $20,000. So after we pay for the life packs, we'll keep $20,000 in there to, I think that was just for, in general, for grants and for the Lucas and radios, I believe. So,
yes.
So we can keep that money in that grant, in that reserve. So let's go ahead. If there's no questions, then we can move on to the next, the income statement.
Todd, I do have a question about wildland billing. I assume we're also charging our administrative fee when we do the billing.
Yes, best of my knowledge, that's true. Yeah. So whoever's doing the billing, okay. we bill their time back.
Yeah, okay. That changed over the course of, I think, the end of last year. And it used to be that we billed specific hours, and I believe they now are doing a 1% reimbursement for staff time. Some version of that. I know that we're doing it.
Okay. I just didn't want to leave anything on the table.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
I'll move you to income. Okay.
Yeah, so we actually pulled in close to $26,000 for February. And then we're expecting to see, I think Ian sent out the next statement, close to $250,000 for March. That should be coming in. But all in all, as far as our reserve funds and accounts receivable that are still outstanding, we have a total of $191,000 of available funds to continue to cover our continued operations. So I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, I think that statement, and I'm just putting it up, the statement I sent out was actually February statement, but we only just got it. So it didn't get captured in the numbers that we're looking at here.
Yes, correct.
So I think we, for February, billed in or received 248,000, just over. And a similar thing happened last year. So last year, there was almost no income in February. It was very similar to this number. And then in the April meeting, it was about 478,000. So it was about half of that income. So it looks like we're kind of on target income wise, basically.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah. So no questions, and we can move on to expenses. Okay, so for expenses, we spent more in February than in January, and that was primarily because of a sick and vacation payout for Ryan. And but we're still about $6,000 underspent versus the flat plan that we show for, you know, equally distributing our expenses over the 12 months. And we're approximately $30,000 underspent going into, you know, through February. So in both cases, I think we're performing pretty well. So any questions? Okay, so in summary, you know, our general funds are, like I said, $191,000, and that includes the accounts receivable of $32,000, and that'll definitely be more than we need to keep operating, and plus we have the money that will be coming in March, and again, our expenses were higher for February because of the sick and vacation payout. And that's the treasurer's report.
Okay, thank you for that, Todd. Any board questions for that?
I'd just like to add, I like this new floor mat better than the old.
Thank you. Yeah, we're trying to make it so that we can all just quickly follow it. Makes it just a bit quicker to chew through and see where we are. Okay, well, thank you, Todd, for that. Chief, over to you for your report.
Evening, everybody. Last night, Rick Henriksen presented fire code to town trustees, and he's working really closely with Safe Build, the town building inspector group, as well as town staff. To kind of push new fire code along, and it touches a lot of different things, meaning residential code, building code, and then currently it would appear that energy code has become a bit of a thing. So anyhow, long story short, he's met with a ton of builders the past couple of weeks, identifying specific costs with sprinkler systems, ignition resistant construction, things like that. So I'm really happy with the progress that he's making and the direction he's heading. And that's taken a ton of work. So I just wanted to acknowledge him on that. I met this past Saturday with four of our new applicants. We generated rookie book version 2. They're anxious to get moving, and we're doing so. And so I'm working pretty close with Charlie and Dan. I have those four assigned to shift officers. They're following up on needed training, CPR, their applicant phase, things like that. So that's all moving along well. I finally got the job posting for the open paramedic shift officer position. I got that onto our website last night, and then I was able to email that out to Division of Fire Prevention and Control, the state chiefs, international chiefs for statewide distribution, and then the combination chiefs group. And so I think that presents reasonably well. I spent a fair amount of effort getting supporting documents for all of that. And obviously we're going to talk a little bit about the testing process later, but so anyhow, the job's posted, the new applicants are moving along. We spent a fair amount of time getting various radios updated, and finally we're able to get our 800 radios updated with last year's updates, but we're actually a little bit of ahead of the curve because we got the changes for this year already in. That'll happen today. We took delivery of the replacement 800 radio, and so that is now programmed. We've received the bill from Motorola. That's $5,700 and change. And once we cut the check on that and pay for it and can show proof of payment, insurance company stands ready to cut us a check for that. So we'll float that for a little bit. We're currently working on ambulance licensing, and that includes physical inspections of the ambulance, paperwork by our physician advisor, and various other things that Jim's working on. So that's all in process. We had a pretty busy week when we get to calls. You'll see some of that. Pretty busy month. And then this past week, some especially difficult calls at Eldora. We had two seriously injured skiers on Saturday, a teenager fatality on Sunday, and another teenager fatality on Monday. And so I've been working on CISD resources with the ski area for some of that stuff. And that's all going, I think, okay. Todd, we had talked last board meeting when we get to the call thing about standards of cover and, you know, functionally, how many responders are we short? And is that a subjective interpretation or what? And at least internally, spitball on that, you know, we've come to, we think we would like 3 on every EMS call and 5 for every car wreck at a minimum. And I haven't attached a number to structure. I do know that we had a structure fire call over the past month, which was really a bag full of ashes burning in a snowbank. And we had 10 responders on that. So it was pretty great response for not much of a call. So we're working on that. I know that Dan took his driver operator test today. And then I'm just going to follow up a couple other things, Ian, that I know are in your ongoing business report. As far as wildland fire billing.
Can I pause you for a second? Yep. I got a couple questions. What's the general timescale for replacing the shift officer position?
It's open until, I believe, the 26th or 28th of this month.
Right.
And unfortunately, Wellington Fire just posted shift lieutenant position, and they're paying top scale $10,000 more than us. And so that's going to create us some competition. And there's another shift officer paramedic position floating around the Front Range as well. I know that I think Lafayette or Louisville just closed theirs. I would imagine we're going to share a number of common applicants. And I don't know when the Wellington post closes, but I know that there's other competing postings out there.
So my question really was, you know, how long does it usually take us to fill that post?
I think it depends on how evolved the testing process is. So if we're closing this end of the month, obviously we're going to have a panel examination. We'll have some form of written or, you know, some type of testing with some initial application review. I would hope that within 3 weeks we can make some decisions following close of application. Yeah, being realistic, I expect that to stretch, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So we're kind of looking May-ish then?
That's my
realistically.
Belief. Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that
the four applicants, did you get a feel for if they were going to be interested in Fire Academy or BMT pass or both, or
so
going to take this?
One applicant is already an EMT. His direction would be paramedic school. I don't know if he's going to do Fire Academy. Okay. The goal with new applicants right now, and so we issued them a bit of the structure PPE that we still have. My goal is to get them wildland fire ready and all of them S-130, 190 certified as soon as we can. That course hasn't been fleshed out quite yet. But fortunately, our Ryan previously did all of the purchasing of our wildland PPE, so I've got to learn that system and develop access to that. But the delay won't be as great as if when we order structure PPE, but the goal is to get them wildland season ready.
Right. Okay. And then kind of the drift of my question, it really was, how are we doing in starting to get them moving through the process so that they start to become, I'm choosing my words carefully here, I don't want to say useful, so that they start to be able to like run calls with us and, you know, provide service, basically.
Well, so some of them are balls of fire, and you know, one of the applicants came in, he was supposed to be packing for vacation for the weekend and came in to meet the rest of the applicants, and then was in there on, I don't know, I think that was last night, chopping ice in front of the station for hours. And so Some of them are already trying to do shifts, having officially been started on Saturday. So I'm pretty encouraged about that. And then there's going to be some slower movers as well, and some folks that we haven't had response back from. And we'll filter that out.
Okay. So I've been questioned a couple of times, and you've talked about response, about, you know, status one responses and what the board and we're all doing about that. And obviously part of my answer to that really is we need to get the applicants moving through the system so that they're in a position where, you know, if nothing else, they can turn up on a call and be a set of hands that is useful to us. So,
understood.
Good to hear.
I can close Chief's report, and then when you go to status of old business, I've got a few things to report on.
Okay. I think that was it for my questions. Any other questions from board?
Yeah, I was, you know, Chief, you had said that for coverage for call, 3 for EMS, 5 for car accident, and I think you said 10 for structure. Was it 7?
I said we got 10 the last one, and 10, yeah. 10 isn't a bad number, but it's an awkward number from the perspective. So absolutely 10 if it's a real fire. We get, I don't know how.
Yeah,
I would,
that's okay.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, that's okay. And I guess the thing is in the status report, maybe if there was a column that would, you know, categorize the calls as EMS, as, you know, car accident, as structure. And I know that not all of these can fall into those three categories, but let's say they did, just so that we can have comparative metrics. You know, it's just maybe a column or maybe some other, whatever you think is best, to be able to allow us to look at the number of people that responded and then what you would have as an expectation and are we meeting that? So if you could update that status report to be able to show that better, that'd be great. Unless I'm missing something.
No, you're right. The table is color coded based on different call types, but we can certainly put in a field that I think we would call desired responders. And I'll talk to Jim about that. In fact, we've had that talk. It just was latent on this one.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay. Go ahead, Ian.
No, see, I think that makes sense. Obviously, some of us interpret what the call type was and, you know, basically whether that was the EMS fire or MVA, just based on the description anyway. So, but yeah, it'd be useful to, I mean, obviously it's color coded, so it's in there. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't catch the color coding too. I apologize for that.
So,
okay, cool.
I guess if we were to evaluate level of performance and either meeting the expected performance or not, I know Chief had mentioned, I think you said 3 people on EMS calls is where you want to be. It'd be that ideal.
That was the group consensus.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good number to start with for sure. So if, whether it's EMS, 5 on motor vehicle accidents, whatever you determine you need for wildland or structure. If we set a baseline number of 4 or three or whatever you just determined. So that's baseline. And then what are our goals? Are we meeting the baseline? Are we exceeding? And then if we say baseline is three for EMS, but the gold standard is four, that would be our benchmark. So are we at least meeting the baseline of three, and how often is that? So realistically right now, could we meet three 75% of the time, 50% of the time? I think maybe we have to set some goals and then evaluate each month. Are we meeting those goals or not?
Right.
And that'll help us kind of drive recruiting and where do we need to go?
Understood.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And like I say, it's a nice visual goal that we can use to assess where we are, more than the kind of general comment of, you know, I ran three status one calls. It's like, you know, like last month there was 40 calls. Still a fair chunk of status one. So yeah, it'd be nice to see what we would desire that to be. I can see where you're going with that. Sorry, Patrick, did you have something else to say there? I think I talked over you.
No, I would, like I said, I would just like to see some numbers written down so that we can, you know, evaluate each month. Are we meeting expectations? Are we falling short? Where are we falling short? Figure out why and then address that specifically.
Okay.
So if we were to say we want three people on EMS calls as the baseline, and we want to, you know, be realistic. Right now we still have, like you said, a lot of status one calls. So to go from whatever number that is in status one to all of a sudden setting a lofty goal and not meeting it isn't realistic. But if we were to say we want three 60% of the time, and then if we can meet that, our benchmark would be three 80% of the time. So really, I guess I'm looking for some feedback, Chief, if you could give feedback on what realistic numbers would be and the numbers you feel are appropriate for, staffing needs for each call type, you know, or category. We don't need to go through all the call types, but, you know, EMS, MVA, structure fire, wildland fire.
Yeah, understood.
Okay. Any other comments, queries?
Well, looking back through February status calls, a lot of it depends on the time of the day,
mm-hmm.
but there's only like five status one calls. And I believe they're pretty much late, but we've had some calls where we've got 10 people standing around.
Yeah.
So kind of comes down to that age-old problem, nighttime calls. I guess I need to look at this a little closer to really make that determination, but
yeah, as Keith said last month, it's kind of surprising. Sometimes it's not the night times, it's in the day, and sometimes it's the call type. And you know, there's a lot of factors I think play into it other than just the time of day.
The lost hiker, what is that? That's like 11 o'clock, no, 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
we had two on scene, one standby,
you know. But Ray, in fairness on that, so that was me and Jocelyn sitting at Eldora Station 3 till 5:15 in the morning. And any more than two was too many. And Rocky Mountain Rescue did all of the field work on that. So it's incredibly hard, even from call type, to decide what that number should be.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. The post office call. What did that turn out to be?
Well, that was three different calls throughout the day. And the last call was a private line call from the postmaster that we got toned for that I responded to. So it shows a status one call, and that was completely appropriate. But I'd say that's about the only time.
Oh, I see. Burst pipes, water leak. So why does that show up in hazmat?
It's a water leak.
Well, okay, I don't think that's hazmat, but that's me.
Yes. All right. I don't know if we have a category for that.
I mean, to me, that would be the Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
Yeah, service call.
Well, we can change them around. That's not a problem. I do like that we're getting some metrics now and able to see this. This definitely is making things much clearer. So that's good.
Yeah, and I have a edification question. Status one, is that under apparatus, the column apparatus, ST1? Or how do you know what's the status one call?
Right. I think they're at station one, so if you have people standing by at station one. So he's accounting for people at station one and then the actual apparatus next to that. And then to the left of there,
And to left of there, what is there? Is there a place where you show?
Yeah, number of personnel. I think that responded, and the number of personnel standing by.
Right, but where do you see what kind of a, if it's a status one call or not?
Just the numeric one is a responder.
Yeah. Yeah. So number of responders on scene.
Okay. Move on. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we're all done.
Hey. I'm the civilian here, you know.
That's fine. We get that, no problem. So moving into old business. I know Patrick has a fun story about a tender. So, Patrick, over to you.
So, Ian, obviously, I've just forwarded the emails that I get from Fire Trucks Unlimited to you. Just to fill everybody in, they finally pump tested the water tender, and it didn't pass pump tests. They pulled the pump apart, and they found a T-shirt inside the pump. So then the sales rep says, we're waiting on parts and parts availability. I said, this has been a signed contract, I want to say, since December 12th or 16th, somewhere around that neighborhood. I let them know that I've been able to do a pre-construction for two Type 3 engines, and once they have cabin chassis, I could have them completely built quicker than what they can inspect, make corrections, and rebuild a pump in the last, what has it been, almost 3 months now. So I offered to them, I said, look, if you just don't have time to make this truck ready, I know that in Las Vegas, there's a very large international truck dealer there with fleet service. We can pick it up and drive it straight over there. They can do a DOT inspection, make any necessary corrections. We will send them the bill for that. And then once the truck arrives here in the Denver metropolitan area, I have several EVTs that can take care of rebuilding this pump, pump testing it, going through and making sure that everything's inspected and the truck's ready to roll. They, of course, didn't like that idea. And I said, okay, well, before any checks are cut, I will be on an airplane out there and I want to see exactly what they're doing. So when I return in about a week and a half, I'm basically, it's a cheap $32 round trip ticket, fly in the morning, fly out in the afternoon, and I'm going to show up midweek for a surprise inspection. I want to see what they're doing. And honestly, my opinion is we're at a point where it's they either perform very quickly or we have to in this contract with them.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. It's starting to draw out a little bit too long. That's good. On a related note, I did have a number of offers from people to help pick up that tender if we get to that stage. So let me know when we get to that stage and I can put out some requests and see who we can wrestle up to go down and pick it up.
Okay. I will certainly let you know when I'm going out there. Like I said, it's a super cheap Frontier flight. I'll go out in the morning, be back in the afternoon, and I will give them a call when I'm at the airport. And so I just want to see exactly what they're doing and why it's taking so long to do something that, quite honestly, would take my fleet mechanic here a week and a half tops. So,
yeah,
I'm not happy.
No. Okay.
That's it. That's all I have.
Okay.
I wish I had something better for it.
Any further comments from any board members on that?
Well, I share his discouragement.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty frustrating. For sure. Okay. Last month, we spent a little time talking about 5 to 16 initiatives. We haven't actually made any movement on that in the last month. Todd was going to lead that, but he had some family matters to take care of. I didn't want to impose on him during that time. So hopefully we can pick that up this month, Todd, if that works with you.
That does. I think I sent you a note in regards to, I should be getting my vaccine here following March 5th. And I feel like a lot of this activity should be tried to be done in more in person if possible. But we can talk about it and then get together with the correct parties to figure out how can this be the most effective.
Yeah. And I think that's the first stage is really just figuring that out. Again, I did have some people reach out to me after the last meeting and say they were interested in participating in this. So really, it's just getting it moving, getting the initial plan of how we're going to approach this setup, and then we have some interest in moving it forward. So that's good. I was pleased to hear that and see that.
That is good to hear.
Last month we discussed paid sick leave or sick time for part-time employees. And I sent you today the resolution to amend the employee policy manual to pull that in. Wording that I put in there, the wording that I put in there is in line with the PPIS. There's like multiple different acronyms that go along with this. But it's basically in line with what the law is currently in place for employers of 16 plus employees. We don't have to do this till next year, but I think it's a good faith, a move of good faith on our part. We can do this. It's not a huge burden for us. We don't have that many part-time employees. So just quickly to run through what changes. So at the moment, actually, Chief, I have a quick question for you. When I change this, I remove the word specialists. Do we need that in there? What does that mean for us? It wasn't clear to me.
Wow. I don't know. And the word specialist was associated with part-time employees. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it used to say Section C, specialist, part-time and temporary employees.
I think that's a carryover from the manual when we adopted it from Boulder Rural. So I don't see any issue with that.
All right. Okay. So moving on. So basically that Section C would be removed from the manual. A new Section 3 would be added for part-time and temporary employees, stating the NFPD's sick time policy for part-time and temporary employees provides paid time off when you are unable to work a scheduled work period due to illness or injury. Sick time is earned at the rate of 1 hour for every 30 hours worked, which is in line with the new legislation, up to a maximum of 48 hours per year. The taking of sick time at your discretion in 1 hour increments. Our current policy manual says 2 hour, the legislation states 1 hour. So I modified this section to reflect that. So as in 1 hour increments, when you are too ill to work or recovering from an injury, accident, medical procedure, or any other qualified reason under PSST, and I'll explain that in a second. Advance notice is requested when possible to allow the management team to plan for staffing replacements. So PSST is paid sick and safe time. So there's other things outside of illness that this time can be used to cover. It's a big long list. I didn't put them in the policy, but they are clearly stated in the legislation. So there's a reference back to that. Sick time periods that extend more than 4 consecutive working days may require documentation from an NFPD determined physician or the employee's own physician. That's from the legislation as well. And you may not use more than 48 hours of sick leave in each calendar year. That comes straight from the legislation also. In terms of accumulation, you may roll over year to year a maximum of 48 hours of unused paid sick time. Again, straight from the legislation. And then
just to be clear on that 48 hour rollover. So let's say they roll over 48 hours, they don't use it. In the coming year, they earn another 48 hours. So they don't necessarily have, like, say, 96 hours now that they're going to roll over into the following year. They can only roll over 48 hours total, right?
Correct. So it's the maximum rollover.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
And then finally, payout upon termination. So employees in this category are not entitled to payout of unused sick leave time upon termination unless retaliatory action prevented the use of qualified sick leave. There's no legislative need for us to do a payout. So I left that as was. And then, like it says, unless there's been some kind of action that prevented you from taking sick leave. So that's basically the change that would happen to the policy manual. Any other questions? Sorry. Stop moving that around.
Yeah, would PTO be a little bit easier than PSST?
No.
Well, so, that's just paid time off.
It is, but the legislation is basically set to do sick time. So PTO, whilst it covers sick time, is basically your employer paying you to take time off for whatever reason you want. So that can be vacation time or sick time. PSST is specifically for sick time. And that was why the legislation was written. So that, you know, if you only get, say, 5 days of PTO, you don't burn all of that as sick time. You basically accumulate sick time as a separate thing. For our exempt and non-exempt and line employees, they all accrue sick time as a separate item as well. So this basically is in line with that policy.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. So on that note, I wish to make the motion that Netherland Fire Protection District adopt resolution 2021-02 to adopt paid sick and safe time for part-time and temporary employees. This is a resolution to adopt the Colorado HWFA paid sick and safe time for part-time and temporary employees. So whereas the Nederland Fire Protection District provides fire suppression, EMS and other emergency services to the town of Nederland and surrounding areas as a combination fire department, whereas the Fire Protection District does not currently provide paid sick time for part-time and temporary employees, whereas the Board of Directors of the Nederland Fire Protection District hereby agrees to provide paid sick time for part-time and temporary employees and amends the Personnel Policy Manual of 2019 to provide the same under the terms of the Colorado Healthy Families and Workplaces Act, paid sick and safe time requirements with the attached text that we just reviewed. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Directors of Nederland Fire Protection District shall adopt paid sick time for part-time and temporary employees by such amendment from January 1st, 2021, with accruals backdated to January 1st, 2021. So basically just taking into account the whole of this year, which is when the legislation came into effect.
Second.
So moved.
And Todd?
Yes.
Okay. So adopted. Chief, I'll send you an updated version of the policy manual tomorrow. And I know we have some other updates to do in there as well that are outstanding. So our task for the next month is to get all of those changes that we've made in the policy manual and get a 2020 manual out and available, and then continue the work on updating the manual as it stands. Just while we're here, while I was looking at our policy on sick time accrual, as of January 1st next year, we'll have to match this for all of our other employees as well. And our current accrual rate doesn't quite match the legislation. It's a pretty simple change, but we just need to change the language in that paragraph, but we can do that later in the year. I didn't want to get bogged down in that today.
What a lovely segue into the Streamline portal update.
Yes, indeed.
So I was just learning Streamline to get the job opening on the website.
Yeah.
And I had an open service ticket with them. And they asked me, can we close it? And I said, yes, but I need some help setting up the portal and I haven't got a response yet. So that's kind of where that's sitting.
And I basically started doing some poking around in it and I've got some questions for them as well, specifically related to, is there more than one calendar? Because I could only seem to get one calendar and that's going to get cluttered very quickly. And then obviously we spoke about this, the how we lock it so that it's not open access, which it currently is. There's a way to do that. But I'm sure it's obvious. I just couldn't see it the other day. So.
Okay.
For those of you watching, this is the portal as it stands at the moment. Sorry, I think I paused my share at some point and didn't open it back up. So this is the portal as it stands at the moment. It's pretty much boilerplate, but we can add things in here. We can store documents, we can store videos. It has different roles. They're not quite as granular as I would like them to be. It's another thing I'd like to talk to them about. But it's a place where we can keep a lot of our information together securely, but easily accessible to members of the department. So I'm kind of excited to get moving with it. It's just getting the time together to just get in there and do it.
Ian, that segues well into the new applicant process. Yes. And so that was one of my struggles, is whether I'm forwarding them a copy of the policy manual and the SOPs and the DOGs and this and that. And so I am anxious also to get up on the portal, and then I just give them the access to it.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's, let's see if we can resolve our issues in a timely fashion. If we can, then yeah, I'd like to push forward with the new applicant, certainly. And certainly with articles like the policy manual, get that up there. So that's always up to date and everybody has a reference for that.
Okay.
And we don't have this disjointed, I have the 2014 version 6 manual, which we should do. Okay. Any board questions? Personally, I'm pretty excited. I think it's going to work out reasonably well. Streamline who hosts all of this seemed to be fairly responsive to feature requests from what I've seen. We haven't tried to do one yet, so I guess that may be a different thing when we try to do that. Chief Lucas Grant.
I spoke with the marketing rep about a week ago, and the physical LP15s are ready to ship. The onboard charging unit is not. I still think they're on track for middle of the month, but she at least called me and told me if we were jammed up, she could get us the defibrillators right away, but this onboard charging thing. So we'll see how that plays out, but currently we're expecting March 15 day.
Okay, so that one's for the LifePak 15s.
Correct. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
We got that one. I think it was going.
Thanks for that. Okay. Yeah. And yes, I did get the Lucas grant submitted to State EMS. Ironically, Eldora also submitted for the same device. And I guess based on the past week that we've had, we would have some awful justification for the device. But I think the interesting thing is that they're going to sit me right next to the ski patrol director when it comes to the grant hearing, and we're both going to have to say, yes, I know he wants one too. And we still think we both need one. So that's where we are on that.
Well, they're kind of hard to share. So I
correct.
See why we both might want one.
And then just interestingly back up, the flight crew, on one of the CPRs this week is like, do you guys have a Lucas that we can take with you? And the answer, unfortunately, was no. It wouldn't have changed patient outcome, but it was at least discussed.
Okay, well, that's interesting. They're on board with that. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Cool. Thank you for getting that in. I appreciate that. Just going back to the Eldora thing, you mentioned CISD resources for Eldora. Have we sent out resources for our members so that they're aware of what's available for them?
I have not reminded, so I have not emailed that. I had one staff member involved in two of the fatal calls, and we have had plenty of one-on-one time. I've asked him to reach out with his partner on the other call, and we will continue to work with Eldora on that. I will remind everybody that our EAP is available. And I've looked at some other resources locally that might be of benefit.
Okay. And again, that's some more stuff that we can work on getting onto the portal once we start getting sure. that together. So that's always there, always available.
I got a quick question.
Yeah.
That's right.
Is Eldora not staffing a paramedic anymore?
Depends on the day. Yes, they are. But not always. And so there are some days that they don't have a medic on staff. And it's somewhat variable. They typically will call us at the start of the day and say, we don't have ALS coverage if that's the case.
Because I did notice we're running a lot more to Eldora than we have in years past.
Depends.
I think there's just been a lot of high acuity calls the last month specifically.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad we're there to help them.
Agreed.
For sure. AFG grant, Chief?
Well, fortunately, it closed February 12th and saved me a lot of work.
Okay. I thought it was the 28th, but okay.
You're right. I think they did extend it, but the initial offering was the 12th. But either way, we didn't make it. But what I would say is don't pull that money out of grant reserve yet. So I'm going to continue to work on that and try and be creative on how we can increase our radio resources. So I'll keep working on it.
Okay. Duly noted. We'll leave that where it is. Any other questions on old business?
Yeah, so under old business, I was going through a whole bunch of back emails and board meeting minutes and that, and we haven't had an update on the Cascade repair. Has that been done?
Charlie managed to work on that lever toggle, and I don't believe we have any issues that I know of currently.
Okay, so we were able to take care of it in-house and not spend a bunch of money.
That's correct.
Okay. It's not quite the picture that was painted at first.
Yeah, also, one of our members reached out to me with some information about a more local resource who would be able to do work on the Cascade. I passed that on to Chief, so... if that comes up in the future, hopefully we'll be able to deal with that a little bit quicker than we did. Okay. Any more?
That's it for me.
Okay. So moving into new business, I sent the board a document the chief's been supplying me, labeled comp time. And I was just concerned that we all understand what this really means, this document. And thank you for your reply today, Chief. I also don't want this to blow up into something else, which is why I'm trying to bring this out or trying to sort this out now. Just quickly, if anybody feels that this should be a special executive session under personnel, then we can move it to there. Just let me know. Okay. So the basically last year when Ryan was out sick, Chief, myself, and I believe Patrick had a conversation about covering of shifts and you know, how that ate into the chief's personal time, in which I believe I said something along the lines of, I have no issues with you taking time, you know, if you cover a shift, taking a day off in the week as compensation for that. I just want to make sure that we all understand that I wasn't entering into any contract or liability for the district in terms of a financial or time arrangement in a one-to-one basis for time compensation. So as I said in the email that I distributed, the chief is an exempt employee, so it doesn't get overtime or any other compensation for working hours outside of his normal hours. His compensation and package basically covers that. In your response to my email, Chief, as you said, you intended that document really to be an indication of the extra value that you were providing to the district and how that could be reflected in the conversations that we had about, for instance, healthcare. So I don't disagree with you on that. I just want to put it on the record that it's not really comp time in terms of a one-to-one relationship of time worked to financial reimbursement or time reimbursement. If we change it to, as you basically said in your email, it was more an indication of the shift you're working. If we could change that to be more timesheet oriented, that would be better. And then the board knows the extra hours you're putting in, and we understand that. and it just doesn't have the comp time label associated with it.
Sure. I don't mind modifying that at all. Okay. You know, and all of a sudden I'm north of 500 hours, right? And yeah. You know, what does that mean? And I can tell you in honesty, you know, covering night shifts from home certainly doesn't feel like that's an equitable one for one. And I don't know if that's 2-for-1 or 4-for-1, or I don't really know what that is. And I don't really want that to be the issue or the discussion. I think we should have some understanding of it at some point, but I wasn't trying to imply a liability, just those broader discussions. So I'll tune that up for you, because I think we still have another 2 months of me covering shifts. And that's kind of how it is.
Chief, I didn't take that as you were implying some sort of liability personally. But what I do know is that most places, if you're basically on standby rate, which is a quarter of your hourly rate. So I don't know, as you said, is that, you know, if you're responding from home, you know, if you work 4 hours, it counts as 1 hour. That's if you were to be paid a standby rate, that's what they would look at. So I don't know if we equate that to, you know, time that you would otherwise be given for time off, if that makes sense.
Well, Ben, I'm not going to argue with you because it's a better deal than I got right now.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be. Yeah, that one would definitely be a question for the CPS or our lawyers,
sure.
Because it falls into the whole FLSA exempt status and what that
right.
means.
Right. No, what I'm saying is we honor that at hour of time off.
Sure, understood. And okay. And so again, like I said, it doesn't feel fair. You know, so I know that my wife, when she's on standby, she gets paid half time. And if she gets called in, she gets paid time and a half when she's there. And I'm in no way suggesting right. that, just that ratio of whether it's 2-to-1 or 4-to-1. And I'm not really expecting to get paid extra for that, in honesty. But there might be consideration when I go and try and take time off or carry over vacation or whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing, like I said, we don't have an algorithm where we decide what that is. So the board's pleasure on that, of course.
Yeah. And part of, I mean, you brought that up, the carrying over of time. I suspect there may be some of that this year. You know, having a shift officer and the cover that you're having to provide there.
Right.
So we can discuss that. I just wanted the board to have clarity on what that was and where we're going with that. And just make sure we all understand that, like I say, it's not a one-for-one relationship. Cool, okay. As you mentioned in your update, Chief, we have posted the role of shift officer. So that's great news, thank you. Getting that done. Chief and I had a conversation with CPS last week about methodology in interviewing and selecting candidates and different ways we can do that and how much money we could spend doing all of that. And I did send all that information onto the board in the last couple of days. I don't know if the board has anything to add or anything they saw that they liked. Part of our conversation really was about trying to figure out what criteria it is that we're really looking for, and trying to ensure that we get that from our limited pool of applicants that we're going to get.
The CPS proposal, is that would be handled through CPS entirely? Other than, you know, of course, the department members taking part in interviews and so on and so forth. But
yeah.
is that handled entirely by CPS? And so the $4,500 covers everything that was shown listed underneath that. And the only additional money is the $50 per report that they listed?
It was two separate things, I believe. There was two different ways of doing what they're doing. Okay. I misunderstood it.
Yeah. Ian, let me know when I can speak freely.
Speak away.
So, Todd, that was my understanding also.
Okay.
And okay. You know, they initially highballed us with we could do a full assessment center for $7,000 to $10,000. And if you guys are hiring a fire chief or assistant chief or something like that, then sure, go through the assessment center thing. And I hate to tell you, so I think the center of the discussion that Ian and I and CPS had is how do we ensure that we get somebody that has good organizational fit? And that's part of why we looked at the Hogan personality assessment tool. And we have other people, we've used other personality assessment tools as well. But I can tell you that paying CPS $4,500 to learn what it is we think the job is seems like an awfully steep price tag. You know, the thought was that we would establish some subject matter experts, ask for Pat to sit in on a wildland fire scenario, Ray, whoever else wants to be part of that discussion. And then we do a couple scenario-based things once we finalize some of our list. The other alternative was that FPSI testing. We used them in our hiring rounds in 2009. This is a little different where they do 25 different video scenarios. And as I understand it, you pick the best option, and is it the second best or the worst option? I know you picked the best one, and I think you picked the worst one.
Yeah, I think it's best and worst.
And to be honest, I haven't used that type of assessment, but I do know Aurora Fire had used some video-based assessment tools. And I honestly feel like the FPSI at 500 to administer the test and 15 a student is not a bad, maybe not a bad, something to have in our tool bag. We've got some internally developed questions as well, and I'll supply those to the board, but frankly, it was everything I could do to get the job posted. So that'll all be coming out. But I guess just me speaking, I feel like the CPS bid at 45 to do a complete job analysis, I think we have a pretty good understanding of what a paramedic shift officer is supposed to be doing. And I think that their resume will detail their certifications experience, and we can certainly drill down on that without spending $4,500.
Yeah. And then the questions that you're compiling, who's taking part in compiling those questions? Is that amongst you and the staff, how are they being generated?
Well, I'm going to go dig out the stuff that we used in 2009. And a number of the staff participated in that process. Ironically, you typically retain those confidentially. But let me forward them up to you to get a look at them. And then, Ian, I don't know what the best path forward is. I suspect it's going to be like a hiring working group. And that probably can only be, can we do two board members on that without needing to post it?
Yeah.
And so that probably should be two board members. I certainly would value, not that I don't value all of your input. So I'll let you sort out who that should be. I'm just going to stop right there. I'm sure staff wants input on the process, and it would be wrong for us to not include their input. And so we will try and solicit some of that as well.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good.
Yeah, I kind of, my preference is on the FPSI questionnaire kind of format. That would be pretty interesting. The CPS assessment thing, yeah, I kind of thought that's a bit rich for us, really. I'd find it very hard to justify that.
Right.
So get back to us. Let us know. I guess that question pool, if you want to move forward with FBSI and how we want to do that. But just for the board, that's kind of where Chief and I have been working just last week to try and get this post filled.
Well, let me work on a rough plan and some supporting documentation. I won't get that out this week, but I'll try and get that out by mid of next week, and we'll go from there. Ray, you had something?
Yeah, I was going to say, one, I don't know that we really had budgeted or even thought about budget money for that. When did we, or what year did we hire the original staff?
2009.
Oh, wow. I thought it was longer than that. There were two board members, and we had a shift captain or lieutenant from Boulder Rule. And I don't remember who the fourth person was.
I thought we brought in something like a Dan Ball, a community member, did we not?
No, we had Eleanor, but she was a board member as well.
So that would be the one piece that we haven't really discussed, is whether we're going to include a community member in this or not. And I don't, at this point, I'm on the fence. I don't know that answer.
Are we, maybe I'm just playing catch up. Do you already have planned for like a peer board assessment prior to going to an executive assessment? Basically, if you hypothetically get 10 applicants and they all meet the minimum requirements of the position, they're eligible for interview, and we have to ask everybody the exact same questions in the same way with the same inflection. So they go to a peer board, which would be at least one captain and several volunteers. And then if that, you know, they basically answer appropriately to a minimum standard of basically hireable, not hireable, then they're passed on to the executive interview, which would obviously be obviously the fire chief and a board member or two. And then of that list that you make out of that, you know, if you start out with five or six, your top three you might send to the scenario base testing. Mm-hmm. That might be a way to hold off on spending a lot of money on people you learn that you didn't want to hire anyways.
Understood. That's roughly the plan, Pat.
Okay.
So I was disappointed back then because the majority, I would say over 80% of the applicants, thought that this was going to be a vacation home and all they wanted to do was work on certifications.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Well, and you weren't involved in that last meet. It was just the four of us, I think. There might have been a fifth one.
But the chief wasn't involved
in the interviews.
I specifically remember some of the applicants. I understand your sentiment and share that.
Well, you whittled it down to the ones that you thought were going to be the best. I want to say we went through about 10, 15 people.
That's true.
But the majority really thought this was going to be a vacation home.
We did not advertise that at the state level. And doing the Missouri Valley IAFC, as well as the state DPS website, I think we're going to get a lot more applications, and I would think a lot more qualified applicants. And so I'm intrigued, but you were right on the budget side. You know, for me to put it in the IAFC, the Colorado thing, it was $280. And so I think we're going to see a little broader pool, but again, we've got some competition out there at the same time.
We weren't looking for paramedics at that point either.
That's correct.
You know, I do kind of like that idea of a peer board. Because that, one, the peers will have a good idea of what qualifications or type of person they're looking at.
Well,
and they also have some ownership in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, ownership and who they can work with.
Right. That cuts down on who the executives have to interview. And, you know, by no means is the peer board making any final decisions. I think the biggest thing is that the peer board and the executives, you know, we have to, all the questions we ask really should be in front of CPS for their approval, make sure that they're appropriate and human resources is happy. But we have to ask the same questions to every applicant and can't be in a leading manner or anything like that.
Okay, well, I think the next stage really is to see what our application pool looks like, our applicant pool looks like, and then draw on that as to which direction we're going to take. But yeah, if you get the, if you can get the information that you have or the questions that you have to the board so that we can look at those, that'd be great.
I'll do it.
We can do nothing until we have an applicant pool. Okay, any further comments on the job posting and methodology? Cool. I sent an email to the board 2 weeks ago, I believe. CPS requested an additional 10 hours for the gender discrimination inquiry to wrap that up. They had to interview more people than they expected. I received back board quorum approval, but we still have to discuss that in an open meeting just to make sure, just if anybody else has any comments that they didn't make at the time, and then we should re-motion it. So it's officially motioned in the meeting, if that makes sense.
You're looking for a motion. I'll second that.
Yeah, basically, first of all, does anybody have any further comment or any comments they'd like to make about the additional 10 hours? Or is everybody good with closing out that inquiry with those 10 hours?
Do they think that's going to cover it?
Yes. They do believe so.
Well, I'm for it.
Okay. All right, I guess I'll make the motion that we provide the additional 10 hours to CPS so they can finish the inquiry. Can I get a second?
So moved.
Okay.
And Patrick?
Yes.
And just for the record, I believe Henry responded to the email positively and agreed that they should do the 10 hours so that we can clear this up or so that we can finish the inquiry as quickly as possible.
You got my approval right, Ian?
Yes, I think I got yours and Henry's. And then
okay,
with, with mine, that gave us quorum and moved forward based on that, but we have to put that. We have to put it through the record of the public meeting. So,
okay. Yep.
Just to keep us in line with open meeting laws. Final item in new business. Then, Todd requested that we move the regular meeting to the third Wednesday of the month for basically for accounting purposes. I'd kind of toyed with this as well, because particularly this year, say every meeting we have falls within the first week, and we miss 2 weeks of the accounting data, just because it isn't ready when the when the board records are made. Todd, you can probably explain that better than I seem to be.
Yeah, and it has to do with the fact that we're, you know, on an accrual system, and you know, like Henry's question last time, why were we not seeing the CPS check and the Lyons Gaddis check in our income and expense reporting, and that's because it hasn't been accrued yet. The check was cut, but it hasn't been accrued. But you know, that's part of it. But I was also going to suggest too that, you know, we could have Kathy send out the detailed reports the week prior. You know, this would give her more time to have the data and then to give us the report. And then instead of, like, say, coming up with questions that are posed during the meeting, you know, the board members can look at those financials and then submit the questions prior, and then we can go over them in the public session. But it gives us, it's a little bit more efficient because it gives us time to find the answers to the questions, and then we can have an open discussion, and then it's not there lagging, and then, you know, we'll get back to the board and so on and so forth. So I think it'd be more efficient in that regard. And then also maybe if it's possible, you know, and again, of course, everybody's busy, but, you know, if it's a third week, and let's say at the end of the second week, you know, we have all the information for the board meeting that gets put out that weekend or, you know, something like that, and we try not to add anything on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, so that then we have time to look over everything. You know, it's just a matter of trying to get the information out before the board meeting, giving us time to absorb it, giving us time to have a good conversation about it during the board meeting. That's my thought, having it later in the month.
Okay, I agree with you. I think some of the meeting information coming just before the board meeting is on me. That's organization on my part. So I will work on that. Chief made a point about if we move it to the third Wednesday, then we have an issue in December because we have to approve the budget by the 15th. So we need the meeting before then. I have a question back to you, Chief, on that. Could we not approve the budget in the November meeting, because it would still have had the required statutory time for comments?
So typically initial budget presentation is October, public comment November, with approval prior to December 15.
Yeah.
We can't approve it because I don't get my final budget numbers till like November 27, 28. So I think I don't have any issue with us moving the meeting. I just think we got to realize that we're going to end up probably meeting the first week of December. To approve budget.
Okay. I don't have an issue with that. Something that popped into my head is that the third Wednesday of the month may fall in the holiday period. So we may have to make some adjustment for that too. And that may be why it isn't that way. But I think it makes sense for the accounting purposes, because we get a fuller picture of each month because we're just that bit further out. It's one thing that's concerned me is that although we get the board reports, we don't then get an updated board report later in the month. Because probably it would just be document overload, and B, just because Kathy doesn't produce them, you know, in mid-month, basically. She produces them for the board meeting. So that's been a concern of mine for a little while. Outside of all of this, I don't have an issue with moving the meeting. We would have to repost all our information, Chief, that you just finished posting, sorry. But other than that, I don't believe there's an issue with us moving it. If we motion and pass it, I'll check that. But I think we can move it.
And would we start next month, do you think, if the motion passes?
Yeah. I have a problem starting next month. We may have to, we may have to have a special meeting. We do have to have a special executive session next month, I believe, to discuss the chief's PIP, because that ends on the 31st of this month. So I was happy to leave that to roll into next month. But the board will need to have a discussion with the chief about the PIP and moving forward and how that goes. And that really will be a, really should be a special executive session. And Chief, I can discuss that with you about how you want to organize that later in all the officialdom of that. But other than that, moving it to the third Wednesday of the month poses us no problems at all. Okay.
I have no issue with it's another Wednesday, so I have no issue with it as long as it, you know, doesn't cause any problems administratively, any dire problems that we can't work around.
Yeah.
I have no opposition, and I like the idea of getting the data sooner.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I make the motion that we move our regular meeting to the third Wednesday of each month at 7 p.m. Currently on Zoom or at Fire Station 1 in Nederland. I get a second for that.
I'll second.
And then Ray.
You're looking for a second?
Looking for your vote in the positive, or your vote in whichever sense you wish to vote. I want to lead you there. Sorry. Just for the record.
Okay.
Patrick?
Yes.
Okay. For the record, Henry sent me an email and he had no issues with moving it to the third Wednesday, but obviously he isn't present, so can't vote. Okay. I don't have anything in future business at the moment. Is there any other board business anybody would like to bring up?
There, I don't know if this is the right forum. Some time ago when we got our emails,
mm-hmm.
Sorry?
I'll stop you if it's not.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Some time ago when we got our emails, our accounts, there was an email that was sent out that said if you needed to change password, you needed to do anything, you could go to this particular link. And I tried using it, and it appears that that site's no longer in existence. And I was wondering if our new website affected the maintenance of our email accounts.
Yes.
So I just thought I'd bring that up as a possibility.
Did you get that squared away?
I did not yet.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I can help you with that. The new website did interrupt some links to the mail system, but I'll try and call you tomorrow and see if I can help with that.
Okay, thanks, Chief.
Super. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. Is there any public comment on anything we've discussed this evening or thought of while we were having this meeting?
Yes. Hi. So, John Scarf here.
Hi, John.
So your next meeting is going to be April 21.
You looked it up faster than I did. Yes, I believe so. That's the third Wednesday.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Okay, I will amend the agenda. Okay. On that note, we have no special executive sessions or conclusions. Next May meeting, as mentioned, will be April 21st. Our next regular meeting will be April 21st, 2021 at 7 p.m. On that note, I'm going to make the motion to adjourn this meeting at 20:37. Can I get a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
I'll second.
I'll take all your seconds as votes at the same time. all on the record. Okay. Okay, everybody, thank you all for your time. Everybody else who attended, thank you for coming. It's always good to see other people having interest in what we're doing, keeping an eye on us. On that note, this meeting's adjourned. I will talk to you all soon. All right. Thank you again.
Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Good night.